You're now in the huddle with Coach Calls Timeout, the podcast that dissects the mind of a different basketball coach every episode. We uncover what makes them successful and how their story translates to your coaching journey. Let's unlock your team's potential together. Welcome to episode 18 of the Coach Calls Timeout podcast. Dan Jonker here. Today we have a guest that has dedicated his time and energy to help boys and girls reach their full potential. As a university basketball player, he's extremely successful and was one of the most decorated players in Canadian basketball. He's a three-time All-Canadian, a National Player of the Year, and his team won a silver medal at the National Championships. I'm talking about Steve Mega, who played for the McMaster Marauders in Hamilton, Ontario. Steve is a high school basketball coach and also has Mega Basketball, where he runs fantastic youth camps and skill development sessions. You can check it out at megabasketball.com. M-A-G-A basketball.com. My brother Brian handles the interview. Let's get right to it.
Welcome to Coach Calls Timeout. Brian Jonker here with you for episode 18. Hard to believe we've already done 17 of these things, and we've had some really good guests, and today is no different. Our guest today won an Officer Gold Medal in high school with Cathedral here in Hamilton. He played his best years at the university level with the McMaster Marauders and helped lead them to four trips to the national championships. He was also twice named the OUA West Player of the Year, and he was the 2000 TSN Award winner combining academic and athletic excellence. He currently coaches a senior boys team at Bishop Tonus High School. And for my money, if you have an organization, a group, a club team that you would like to have trained or worked out, this is one of the best people in the entire area for being able to help in that regard. And of course, I'm speaking with Steve Mega. And Steve, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join me today.
Thanks for having me.
For my money, as I said in the intro, with large groups especially, I don't think there's anybody better out there than yourself in training. How did you get involved in training and how did it evolve to where you're working with organizations now? And large groups?
Well, it started out at after university, my playing days at McMaster, once they finished, it was actually my dad who had the idea of just running a weekend shooting clinic for elementary and high school aged kids. And I just delivered flyers actually right to elementary schools and tried to get some interest. And I've always been into teaching and speaking, although if you've met me personally, I don't think I come across as much of the outgoing person. But much like my playing days, when I kind of cross the lines, I'm able to get into kind of the method of someone who can teach and engage and have a bit of a presence on the court. So that's when it started. And I think through word of mouth, different organizations, and I was lucky enough to be a pretty successful basketball player. So my resume, as far as people trusting me coming in, got me in the door. And then through trial and error and through practice and through watching some of the greats do it, I think it just kind of came naturally to me. I am a teacher by trade, so I think it does come naturally to me, and I do have a lot of practice with it.
So I'm going to touch on a couple of things that you said there. First of all, it's funny, we as coaches, everybody, I think, always expects coaches to be that outgoing, extrovert. But in reality, I'm the same way. I think there's more introverts in coaching than people might think, where you might prefer socially to be in smaller groups. But when you get in a big group, for some reason, you have the ability to stand up in front of people and talk and do those things. It's kind of a unique dynamic, I think. And it's people might not understand that.
I agree totally. I think if you look at a lot of the coaches, I think you have to be a bit, obviously cerebral in the sense of thinking and how to attack and adapt and how to reach different kids in different ways and even different adults in different ways, be it your assistant coaches or things that you're helping out, people you're helping out. And so I do think that they're a bit of introverts by nature as far as what the job goes. And then you get into, the level you're coaching at where you have to recruit, and then, a different mentality does have to come up and be able to reach those recruits and get them to convince them to come to your school and play for you. But I do agree. I think when you're passionate about something and then secondly, when you're knowledgeable about something, you do have the confidence and you kind of find it within you to be able to speak in large groups and reach large groups of children. But I do agree that it is a bit of a skill to be able to control and be able to instruct large groups without losing the group or losing certain individuals. So it is an interesting dynamic of how coaches can morph into different things as needed.
Well, your skill in that nature is fantastic. I mean, for anybody out there who hasn't seen him, in a large group, you go to a skill session, for example. My daughter went through the Brantford CYO program, so Coach Meg has been extremely involved with the boys and the girls, Brantford CYO programs, especially early season in the skill development area. And when you get 50 to 100 kids in a gym all at once, man, that's a real skill to be able to not only organize and get them going, but to have the command where, you know, when you're teaching something, there is very little else going on in the gym, regardless of how many other people are there. And I think that's really, really impressive. It's like herding cats, I guess. And what do you think makes a good trainer?
Well, I think the kids can sense or taste a genuine nature, and they can feel that you're not faking it. You're truly engaged, doing something that you love and know what you're talking about. I think that's undeniable. And I think that when people don't have that passion, or they're trying too hard, or not necessarily have all the knowledge that you truly need to command, you know, 50 to 100 kids in one gym, I think that shines through. You have to be able to organize them in an efficient manner. And I really enjoy working with the Brantford CYO, both boys and girls, and all the other organizations that I work with. And as I go through, it's funny because as the person doing it, you know, I'm very OCD and get anxious even when I have to do these skill workouts, even today, even though I've done hundreds of them. But I think that maybe speaks to how seriously that I take it. And I really want to give every kid that's in front of me an honest effort. And I think this day and age, sometimes that's harder to find, you know. And then we would hope, but I think the kids can sense if people are faking it and if they're not genuine and don't understand really what they're doing.
From having watched you, I think that really is the number one key. There's no time where I look at you and what you're doing, even though, as you said, you've done hundreds of them, where I get the feeling like you're just mailing it in. Your energy, your enthusiasm, I think that's the thing that comes through. And like you said, if it's not genuine, they'll figure it out. And on your case, it's authentic. And I think that is the biggest reason why you're able to command the room the way that you are. It's very impressive. Our guest today is Steve Mega. You can get a hold of him at megabasketball.com, megabasketball.com. Steve, what do you think, or how much time do you put into preparing for, say you were doing a session with Brantford CYO this Saturday, and you've got groups of all ages coming in hour after hour after hour. How much time do you put in preparing for those sessions? Or are you at the stage now where you've got 1.5 million drills in your head and you gauge the group that you have when you get there? And how much does it change throughout the day as the age group increases in age?
Right. Good questions. So I always, my mentality is that I have to prepare a minute by minute schedule that I'm going to run through for each age group. And when I look at large groups over the course of one entire day or 2 days, if it were, I kind of look at grades 3 to 5, 6 to 8, and then 9 to 12. And if there's a bigger high school group, then you would again divide those into 4 different kind of schedules, daily skill workout schedules, because you want to make sure I'm big on progressions. And even within each group, I think it's important to progress from one stage to the next, because especially with the young kids, the house league type of atmosphere, skill workouts, you're not sure what you're getting until you get there. So you want to make sure that it goes from basic to more advanced and be flexible enough to read the group while you're there. Maybe you're not going to get into the advanced, which is fine. The key is you want to challenge everybody there, and there's different ways to go about doing that. So I definitely spend a few hours preparing each division, if you want to call it, before going to those sessions. And then once we're live, then you always have to adapt. There's been numerous times I can remember spending hours and losing sleep at night over what I'm going to do the next day and devising a plan. And then you get there and it kind of goes out the window. But I think as coaches and as successful people, if you know, the lack of preparation is preparing to fail type of antage. And I think that goes hand in hand with what I do anyways and with my personality. So I think it does take hours to come up with this stuff. You know, and a lot of it is, you know, you have to do professional development too. As a skill trainer, as a coach, we need to develop our skills and to improve. So I just don't expect the kids to improve and work on their craft. You know, we also as coaches and skill guys need to work on our crafts and research and look at the kind of the best practices out there.
And that was going to be my next question. So where do you tend to look for that sort of improvement, or where do you get your drills from? Where do you do your professional development?
Well, a good friend of mine, Mihai Raducanu, runs No Limit Performance. And so we talk often, and I do a lot of work out there with him, and I run kind of No Limit Performance in this area if we get together. So I use him as a great resource, as well Gannon Baker, who Mihai learned his craft from. So we're in talks with Gannon, and we you know, see what the latest trend is. I mean, he's fortunate enough to train NBA caliber guys, as is Mihai trains NBA and European pro guys. So I think that gives me a great kind of European / NBA pro perspective. The other resource that I really think is valuable is Chris Oliver, who's the coach at University of Windsor, his basketball immersion site. And the membership there, Chris was our assistant coach at McMaster, and I always thought individual skills was one of his strengths. And I think he does a great job of incorporating individual skill development and coaching in a team atmosphere and trying to mesh those two and really make it a players type environment. So those are three guys that I use as great resources. And I think anybody can use those. They're all available as well.
Do you notice a difference, or do you do anything differently between doing a session with boys versus girls?
No, I don't. I think that they're pretty much the same. Oftentimes, there may be a little more control factor in with the boys than the girls, you know, as you get. I know, you know, oftentimes you say that the girls listen more efficiently than boys, to put it nicely. So, I mean, that would be the only difference. You may have to change a few drills just based on attention span and attention to detail. But I do think that the other difference would be that, you know, boys and girls do play a little differently. However, at a young age, that athleticism doesn't really come into play that much. For example, you know, 10-year-old, 12-year-old boy is not playing above the rim, and neither is a 10 or 12-year-old girl. However, if I'm training 18 to 24-year-old men, we'll call them, versus 18 to 24-year-old women, then there's some difference just because of that extra athleticism, ability to play above the rim.
Yeah, when you talk about, you were putting it very mildly there when you say the boys.
Yeah,
I mean, we both did some sessions there at Tollgate Tech, for example, in Brantford.
Yes, right.
And yeah. And the early group especially had 50 kids in a single gym.
Yeah.
And they were ages, I don't know, 8 to 12 or 13. Holy smokes, man. That's if you want to be challenged in your ability to organize and sustain any kind of learning environment, and that's probably as big a challenge as you could have.
Big time. I know there's a reason I think elementary classrooms are capped at 21, right, versus high school where I think you can push to 30 to 33.
Yeah, well, nobody told those guys when they put 50 of them in that one gym.
Yeah, no, it's not certified by the Ministry of Ed, obviously.
Let's move over to the coaching side a little bit, because you do coach high school boys at Bishop Tonus. How did you get into the coaching side of it? Was it just an evolution and a part of your job as a teacher and your history and background, or did somebody push you towards coaching?
No, I think it was a natural progression. I mean, my high school coach, I went to Cathedral Boys, and Coach Mark Walton was my coach. So he, and being a point guard, kind of, we're always a coach on the floor, and he always pushed me and thought that, you know, coaching would be a big fit for me, and because of the type of player that I was, and the way I thought through the game. So, and then I had Coach Razzo at Mac, who was another big famous coach, I had the same roles there. I mean, as far as getting, and after Mac, actually, I was an assistant for Joe Razzo for a couple of years. So I did have that natural progression. I think a lot of players, when they end their university careers, they're really not ready to end basketball per se. And if I wasn't going to pursue the professional avenue, then coaching was the natural progression. And after helping out with Coach Razzo at Mac for a couple of years, I did my MBA at Mac. So my first job was actually not in teaching, but I was a financial analyst with Canadian Tire Financial Services and their marketing department in Oakville. And while doing that, I coached boys at Cardinal Newman Catholic Secondary School in Stony Creek. So coaching was always kind of part of what I did. And then once I became a teacher, then it became a natural progression. I don't know, expectation probably as well as far as doing it. I remember sitting in some interviews and, the principals saying, we hope and we expect that you'll come in and take over. And when I first started coaching, I actually did both the junior and senior girls. Well, we just had the juniors, so but basically the senior girls and senior boys. So anybody who knows how that season goes, they overlap quite greatly. So it was taxing, you know. And then once I had my oldest daughter, then I just did the senior boys. But now having two daughters, I can see that role reversing in a few years once they get into more basketball.
And how old are they now?
Grades 4 and grade 1.
And so are either of them playing basketball yet?
Yeah, they both. I run the 1 hour session at Transway on Sunday mornings for their age group. So they both participate in that. And I'm hoping my oldest daughter gets into the rep scene pretty soon. I think she's getting pretty good. She does all the skill work with me. And I'm kind of neat to see that, where she hasn't played games necessarily, but has done all the skill work. And when we play the games at the house, I think she does fairly well, and it's almost invisible as far as her lack of game experience. And we talk about that European model of potentially maybe not playing games until you're after you're 12 or 13 or something like that. And I always wonder if that's just more textbook or if it's actually practical. But so far so good with her, and we'll see if she wants to pick it up next year.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of listeners here who are young coaches or coaches who kind of just get involved because their kids are playing now, so they're helping out or whatever they're doing. But that skill development is so important, and at all ages. But I coached my daughter the last 4 years through the CYO rep program. She's in high school now, in grade 9. But the last 4 years, we had a group of girls that we were together with, and I mean, we'd spend 75% to 80% of our time on skill development, even right through the grade 8 age. And I can't emphasize enough to people listening out there that at the young ages, especially, even with my college guys, I mean, we still spend, 40 to 50% of our time on skill development, even in our practice time. But at the young ages, we're spending 75 to 80% on skill development.
Yeah, I would agree totally with you, and I'm happy to hear that you'd say even the college guys, because I sometimes think, your listeners or young coaches think that things change drastically when the players get better. But, in essence, it should get simpler if they're more skilled, right? So, I mean, the idea is to get them as skilled as possible, and then that should make everything else easier. We look at games at all levels and seeing where do they go wrong, and it's often turning the ball over, not being able to handle the ball, not being able to shoot, and we're talking not contested shots but open shots, because that should be the goal of offense, is And really, it comes back to that skill training and working on the fundamentals of the game in our team practices. And I think for anybody out there listening and wondering, I think that we have to make sure when we're doing those skill fundamental work in our practices that we have to try to make them as competitive as possible and as intense and as possible to mimic that game-like environment. You know, you can always say a kid can knock down an open shot in practice, but when the lights come on in a game, you know, everything's happening a little faster. Their mind's moving a little faster. Their heart rate is a little faster. So I think by making everything as competitive as possible in practice, you know, that can only help once they get to the game. I remember Coach Dave Smart, who was my provincial team head coach for Ontario, and he's, for those listening, he's the head coach at Carleton University, and they've, you know, been dominant over the last 15 years in the CIS, which is now, I guess, the youth sport from what I read on Twitter. And he always stressed, we try to make practice so hard and so competitive that come the game is actually easier. I mean, that's easier said than done, but I think that should be the ultimate goal.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at his program, the most impressive thing to me is what you just said plays through on a night in and night basis in that there's no letdown. Like when they play teams they're supposed to beat, they beat them.
Yeah.
You know, hey, we should win by 40 tonight and they squeak out a 20-point win, get on the bus and go home happy. They win the games they're supposed to win by the amounts they probably should win. There's no letdown. It's unbelievable.
No. Yeah, it is. I mean, I remember talked to their players and even Victor Razzo, who would have an interesting perspective because, you know, he was around our teams for years and obviously his dad coaching at Mac, and then he, you know, played for Coach Connolly at Mac and then transferred to Carleton. So he kind of gets both sides of the story. And I remember asking them and even Dave, you know, like it was a simple answer. And it really is they just work harder, you know, that their practices seem harder. They're more intense. The kids get up more shots. You know, they're doing individual workouts. So again, it speaks to that skill development above and beyond their practices. They're down in the summer training with each other. And they said the biggest thing for them is the graduate guys come back and really kick everybody's butt when they come back and set that bar. So when the rookies come in, the standard and the tradition is set there before they even can think otherwise. And, that's a big thing. I know, you know, Mac's doing a great job at that. I think I'm not sure if the rankings have come out, but I think they're going to be, you know, possibly top in the country until maybe they play Carleton. They've had a great run. Your teams at Mohawk have been top in the country for the last, you know, seems to be the last 5 years, national championship. So the good thing is the example is right here locally. You know, I mean, I'm going to take a couple of my guys who are being recruited out to a Mac practice. I'd love to get out to one of your practices, bring them out there and just kind of show kids, younger kids, what it takes and what the intensity level's like and how hard the people work. Sometimes kids, you know, obviously at the house league level, they just don't know what that second level of working hard is, you know, getting to that second wind.
Yeah, we're right now, I'm not going to say struggling, but we've got 9 kids right out of high school this year, and we haven't had that in 7-8 years.
Yeah.
And the expectation of theirs as to what this was going to be like is completely different from what it is. Mm-hmm. And, we've had a real struggle in the amount that, you know, teaching and the culture we've established has been that of working and progressing. And, you know, it's been a challenge early in the year to have the 2 or 3 returning guys say, hey guys, this isn't the way we do stuff. This isn't, you know, high school. You can't just come and go whenever you want. And when we're here, we got to focus and work, you know?
Yeah. That's a tough whole culture thing. I, you know, speaking of culture, I think that's super important as far as the coaching ranks go. I know, you know, I was talking to the Lakehead, Manny Furtado, who's a local guy and an assistant at Mac and Carleton. So he's learned from the best around. And he sent a D1 transfer home this summer. I said, geez, I thought he was going to really help you. He said, Steve, I'm not going to let one guy ruin the culture that I've taken 3 or 4 years to create, right? And it's a big, you know, to maintain a winning culture or to create a winning culture takes years, but only, you know, days or months to destroy.
That's a really important point for people out there too. I think that the talent level of an individual doesn't necessarily equate to the value that they have in a group. So when you say he sent a guy home because he's worried one guy might mix things up, we got better when we started recruiting people who were more serious about school and had support from different areas outside of basketball, and just in general seemed to be a little bit stronger character people. Mm-hmm. And when you brought up Mac's great start this year, and I'm saying this, I mean, we played them in an exhibition game, and I'm saying this as an outside observer, but I think that Mac has had more talent in the last 5 years than they have this year, but they're damn good this year. And it's because they play well together. They seem to enjoy being around each other. They share the ball. They work hard. The body language was so much more positive this year in the one I saw in film and the one we played against them than I've seen in the past. And I think you're right. They're going to be scary good. And I think people automatically assumed this was going to be a down year because some of their talent had left. I actually think it's going to be a good year, and it's more to do with chemistry and a work ethic than anything else. That's from my observation.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. You know, I was kind of wondering how it was going to kind of start for them this year. But I mean, it's a great, I always thought that, you know, that might have been the downfall in the last couple of years was that, yeah, they had super athletes, super skilled guys, but you're missing that little intangible, which, you know, often people think, you know, is that little just mumbo jumbo coach talk, right? But you can really see the difference this year because on paper, one might say, you know, if these guys played pickup against last year's team, you know, in a pickup game, you know, the last year's team, you know, would send them off the court, but you play in a real game and things are different. And over the course of the year, with academic challenges and, you know, life challenges, you know, how a season goes for coaches and kids, lots of things happen, right? The change of the dynamics. You have to be strong character people to withstand all those ups and downs and be resilient. And those things come with character.
You've mentioned the two main coaches that you played for, Coach Walton and Coach Razzo. They're very well known, very respected, legendary, if you will, coaches, especially in Ontario here. Would they be considered your biggest mentors, or do you have other mentors? I mean, you come from a basketball family as well. Who's your coaching mentors?
Well, for sure, my dad was my first coach, so, you know, he'd be my number one mentor. I think he was a very successful coach at the high school level, coached at Bishop Ryan, Cardinal Newman, and then at Cathedral with us. He was a vice principal at the girls' school and helped coach our senior team to those OFSA wins. And he actually carried on after that. And so he has, you know, he's got two or three OFSA championships. So he's well above me. But so he was, you know, the number one was the coach that I began even elementary school with. And then Coach Walton and Coach Razzo as high school and university. Jay Trano was a big influence as well. He was our junior national team coach. And I always thought he brought a calm to the bench and to the players. He was a real player's coach in the sense that he could really actually show you what to do, you know, him being a famous, amazing basketball player himself. And he really had that, grabbed your attention just by his, you know, his playing days and what he could do. He recruited me out to Simon Fraser. I went there first, actually, for a year. But then that's when the Vancouver Grizzlies came to Vancouver and he got a community relations job. So he, you know, he obviously left and no blame to that. And Scott Clark became our coach. And I really value that year. I know I transferred back to Mac, but I speak very highly of the SFU program and Coach Clark and how we ran it. And I really think that was huge as a player for me, the development, the skill sessions that they forced us to do and the weightlifting and that really opened my eyes to kind of like the next level of basketball and what it took to be great. So I was fortunate enough to have a lot of quality coaches. Coach Dooley and Coach Smart were huge for me as provincial team coaches. Chris Dooley, who's a retired teacher from Burlington Notre Dame, was the provincial team coach, and Dave Smart was a young up-and-coming coach, and he was the assistant coach. So I was really fortunate. Peter Campbell, who retired from Laurier, was also one of the national team coaches that I played for throughout my playing career. So, I mean, it goes lots. I mean, you're very fortunate when you get into the Canada basketball scene. You get to really be subjected to some top-level coaching, and guys can really teach you those little nuances that, you know, maybe otherwise you wouldn't get.
Yeah, I mean, when you go through that, that's a real litany of coaches there. And I guess it goes hand in hand when you are the caliber of player that you were. It's by no accident then that the coaching at the levels that you play at are also going to be equal of that caliber. So, but those are, those are some of the greatest names in Canadian basketball coaching. So, very fortunate there for you. But again, you worked hard to get to those levels to have the opportunity to be coached by those people, too. So.
I know. And when he asked that question, I automatically go local, but then I start thinking for myself. And you're right. When you start going through those names, you're like, geez, that's very fortunate. Very fortunate.
Yeah, that's a big group. That's for sure. A big group of great coaches who have all coached at a lot of different levels now, too. So In coaching itself, what's your favorite part? Do you enjoy the training, the preparing, or do you enjoy the actual game or the competition of it? What do you enjoy most?
Well, I really enjoy the practice and the preparation. I like working on things with the kids and seeing their developments. I like working the strategy as far as offensive and defensive strategy goes to try to stop a particular opponent or try to score on a particular opponent. The games, I find, once the lights go on, your control lessens a lot, and I think that's one of the things that you have to get over as a coach, that if you're trying to do too much during the games, then you probably didn't do enough during the week or the days in preparation. All the work's done in the practice, and then ultimately it's a couple coaching adjustments here or there, or some personnel decisions and that sort of thing, where to attack. But so I think the preparation is, you have more control. So I think, you could say you enjoy that more. And then during the games, your control lessens, but it really opens up a different avenue or a different aspect of adjustment and coaching.
In the FIBA game itself, you definitely lose a lot of control. And if your people aren't prepared, then that's the biggest struggle. The one thing I will say is, and you'll find this out when your daughter starts playing, if you aren't already aware, but that to me was the biggest challenge when you had 8-year-old girls, a rep team, you're playing FIBA rules and you can't call timeouts to help or stop anything. So it's just a mess. And I mean, you can't. There isn't enough time to prepare with people of that. I mean, they're just starting out, right? So you're at the end of the game, it's absolute chaos with, 40 parents and grandparents and everybody else screaming and yelling in a gym. And you're trying to get some girls' attention to just, hey, go over there and do this. And you're wishing, like, can I just call a timeout so I can speak to them for 30 seconds? And you can't.
You can't.
Oh, no. And it's, at the young ages, especially, I've questioned many times whether that's the best approach from a Basketball Ontario standpoint, whether maybe there shouldn't be a little bit more time to be able to herd and teach. But I guess it's all part and parcel with learning and preparing on the fly, I guess. But
it seems crazy, right? I mean, you'd think that, we should almost play in a quiet gym with nobody around and give the coaches double the amount of timeouts to try to teach and do that. But I understand the time constraints and all the rest. But I can only imagine how chaotic it must be.
Well, it's far more chaotic than at the high school or even the college level, because you're in tiny gyms, especially at the young ages. You might be in a grade school gym where there's no seats even and people are standing. And if you put 50 highly emotional, invested people with their 8-year-old kids playing in the same place, and it generates a lot of noise, and most of it is of the negative variety.
Yes, no doubt.
It's chaos, you know, but it's all part of it. It's fun. So our guest today is Steve Mega, and you can reach Steve if I couldn't recommend anybody better. If you've got an organization out there and want some training for your house league programs or your club teams, you can reach him at megabasketball.com, megabasketball.com. We always wrap up our Coach Calls Timeout with something that we call the full court press. I throw a few questions at you here, just looking for quick one or two word answers. We'll see if you can get through this.
Sounds good.
All right, here we go. If you could be an assistant for any head coach in any sport, past or present, for one day, who would it be?
Coach Phil Jackson.
What age group do you enjoy training the most?
18 to 24.
Do you prefer training athletes or game coaching?
Training athletes. No winner and loser.
Offense or defense?
Offense.
If you're up 3 points with 5 seconds to go and the other team has the ball, are you fouling them?
Fouling them in the full court.
You prefer the college or the pro game?
College. More strategy.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you taking time out of your schedule to be with us today. And I think the listeners would have got a lot out of this one from a lot of different angles. So thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for including me. I really had a lot of fun.
There you have it. It's rare to find an extremely successful player that becomes a great coach. Highly skilled players usually have trouble understanding the game from a beginner's perspective. The great thing about Coach Steve Mega is that he has a natural ability to teach, and that shines through every time he's in the gym. Did this episode remind you of a coach you've had, or did it remind you of a basketball experience you've shared with someone? If so, we'd love to hear about it. You can go to coachcallstimeout.com/stories to share your story. We're looking for stories about coaches who are creating fantastic memories for their players. Help give them the recognition that they deserve, and possibly get their story told on this podcast. Again, you can go to coachcallstimeout.com/stories to share your story. If you enjoyed what you heard, we'd appreciate if you could rate us on iTunes or share this episode by going to coachcallstimeout.com/18. Here at Coach Calls Timeout, we're a basketball coaching resource built to help coaches improve their personal and technical skills. If you're interested in what we do, we have more resources than just this podcast. You can go to coachcallstimeout.com to learn more. There's even a free 7-day trial of our membership program that you can take advantage of as a podcast listener. Just use the coupon code PODCAST when you're signing up. We currently have over 100 video plays and drills available for all game situations, ages, and skills, and we're adding more videos every month for our members. The unique thing about our resource is that every video that we have can be downloaded directly to your laptop, tablet, or phone, and you can call it up at any time you want. We'll be back again in 2 weeks to pick the brain of another great coach. See you then.